Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. It is the 8th of September, and we welcome you to this fine day as well as to this program. Let me introduce everybody to you. Just remind you beforehand that we welcome your comments as well. You can be a part of this panel conversation by simply emailing us, panel@wamc.org. That is the address, the one and only, panel@wamc.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm just fine. I'm looking out the window, and it's green and nice, and I hope the winter stays away for just a little while.
Absolutely. Well, we've ended the summer season, the unofficial end of summer, of course, with Labor Day, but we still have some good days of summer ahead of us, and then the fall, and you know, we'll see what happens. But
that's good.
Enjoy the green. How was your? Did you have a beautiful anniversary weekend?
Well,
I saw pictures.
It was interesting.
It was interesting.
There and back. It took, you know, 3.5 hours each way.
Yeah.
The ferry was great, and the ferry company, you know, has put on security people, and they go around and they tell you to put a mask on, or I presume jump over the side, but whatever they tell you to put your mask on. Fire Island is not what it once was. Rosemary will be very interested in this. You know, it was once a place for children and, you know, their parents and stuff. Now it's, you know, well, grotesque.
But you had a nice anniversary.
We did. We had a wonderful
time. All right. That's great.
Great time. And we sat out on the deck at the wonderful restaurant Matthews and looked out at it as a big yacht came in with a big sign on it that said Trump. And then underneath it said no more BS.
Wow.
Said it all.
I would think that would be very popular in Fire Island. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo, good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. All right. I'm glad.
Silence.
I'm glad you're here.
And we're glad you're here.
Former Times Union associate editor Mike Spain joins us. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here. And you were talking about the weather. Yesterday it was in the high 80s in Denver, and it's down in the 30s, and they're supposed to get 5 inches of snow. So count your blessings.
Whoa. That's right. And meanwhile, in parts of California, it was over 120 degrees this weekend, which is just mind-boggling. But
it's crazy stuff.
It is indeed. We also go to our good friend, the Empire Report's J.P. Miller. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm pretty good, Joe. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you. Good to have you here. Let's get started and talk about what has happened over the past 3 days. And it's all good. No, not at all. But we'll talk about it, and we'll try to make sense of at least some of it. So what happened over the Labor Day weekend, as most of you know, that the the campaign has been going on for years, but when the official campaign season, the real meat and potatoes of it, is considered to be from Labor Day to Election Day. So yesterday was Labor Day, and that was everybody watches and sees, well, what is everybody doing on this day of campaigning? So Vice President Mike Pence was out in Wisconsin, as was the vice presidential Democratic candidate Kamala Harris, both looking to see if they could get votes in that all-important state. And then, meanwhile, Donald Trump was back at the White House, and he was I want to read what the New York Times says, because I like this. They're dueling events at opposite ends of this increasingly pivotal state, as well as Joseph Biden's visit to another battleground, Pennsylvania, were soon overwhelmed by a force as strong as any current, President Trump's thirst for attention. The only member of the two tickets not to be on the campaign trail Monday, Mr. Trump abruptly called a White House news conference and then used it to air a range of personal and political grievances. He called his opponents names. Mr. Biden was a stupid person. Ms. Harris was a not a competent person. Yet more notable than his usual partisan insults was his extraordinary attack on the country's senior military officials. Alan, no surprises here, I guess, but I'm interested in your thoughts.
Well, I am not a good interpreter of Donald Trump. And the reason I'm not good is I never know what he thinks he's doing. You know, I mean, look, he's behind. He's going to get further behind if he keeps this up. Clearly, he needs the military vote in order to win. And he can't have it right now. In fact, Biden is winning, albeit by, you know, 6 points. That's an extraordinary turnaround. Now, if I'm a military person, I'm not, but if I was, I'd be highly insulted, especially if I had been wounded or if I'm one of the thousands of people who have Purple Hearts for having been wounded. I would be really ticked off, or worse than ticked. But not for radio. So I think he's making a major effort to get himself into even more trouble, because he loves to be to be looked at as an unexploded bomb. I mean, you never know what he's going to say. There is that. Now, as far as Kamala Harris, she is going to be terrific. She is really what this country needs right now in a candidate. She's out there. She's in Wisconsin. Can you imagine comparing Mike Pence to Kamala Harris in terms of the way in which they are perceived by voters? She's going to be a terrific asset. And I've been wondering when they were going to unleash her, and now she's unleashed.
Ready to go. JP.
You were right in your introduction, Joe. We've got 56 days until the election. This is the best time of the year. We've got 3 weeks until the first debate. The election is on, and what we're going to see in the next 56 days is going to be, for people that like watching politics, the most exciting time that you'll see every 4 years. I thought that, you know, over the last 2 weeks, Trump had gained a little bit. As TV sets showed, you know, cities burning and Republicans traditionally do better among people that, think that there's crime in the city, in the cities. And Friday with this, news story about him talking about military families, the entire weekend was consumed with people talking about it. I think everybody believes that he said it, and it's hurting him with an important base of military families. The visits, I think that the visits yesterday were certainly overshadowed by Trump's press conference, and I wonder how much visits to swing states count in an environment when everybody's consumed with what's happening with, I feel like, national politics rather than what happens in each state.
Well said. Mike Spain.
Yeah, that's interesting, JP, the point you make. While some of the candidates are out stumping, Biden was in Pennsylvania again, trying to get that state in his electoral college tally. And then you had, Wisconsin was decided in favor of Trump by less than 1% 4 years ago. So it definitely is a state that Biden can do well in, and Harris was there, so was Pence trying to hold on to it. But then the president can just walk out of his office into the press room and kind of take all the air out of the room. It does seem, disproportionate. It makes you wonder, where the real race is. But Trump is out there today. I mean, he's supposed to go to North Carolina and Florida, I see. And, he knows where the swing states are. Florida is vulnerable. Hillary lost it by 2% in 2016. Biden's got new ads that are coming out. The well-financed Biden campaign is putting out ads aimed at seniors, promising to protect Medicare and Social Security. And, it's a crazy time. Yes, JP, it's a very interesting time for we who are big fans of politics.
Rosemary Airmail.
I'm stunned that we talk about this election in such normal terms. You know, it's the season and what the schedule is, and there just seems nothing usual about this whole administration to me. I certainly am seeing, while I'm out doing census enumerating, lots more political signs of both parties in upstate New York, Trump and Biden signs. I just can't believe that there are people undecided yet. And Trump, the show has been going on for 4 years. Do we really think we're going to get something new and different, that there'll be new developments, that he said bad things about war people is a new story? He's been doing that since 2015. His attacks on McCain and on Gold Star families, it's all the same thing. And I don't know. It seems like we keep jumping on it like it's news, and it's not. I want this. I'm so ready. I'm a junkie like you guys are, but I'm so ready for this election to be over. I want to know what the decision's going to be.
Well, I don't want to speak for the group, but it seems like everybody's probably, you know, and I speak for our listeners as well. I think everybody's ready for this to be over with. But over this 50-plus days that we have, it is, and Alan made this point last week, and I think it's really central to what you're talking about, which is the interesting thing to me is, though, that we don't see the needle moving much as far as the numbers. We don't see, in other words, what Trump is doing doesn't seem to be working especially well. And you keep wondering if there's going to be a pivot, a change. I'm not saying it, you know, in a positive direction, but at least something different. This chaos upon chaos upon chaos doesn't seem to be working especially well. And even in the states where it's quote-unquote close, that gap seems to be widening. So if there is a news story, it does seem to be that, doesn't it, Rosemary?
That's a good way to look at it. That is true. Trump is not pulling it off. It seems like finally all of his mistakes and excesses are being evaluated, and it's being held against him now. I certainly want that to be the case. On the other hand, the loyalty towards him by so many people is just shocking. I keep thinking ahead to win or lose, how we're going to try to meld together as a country after November. We're so far apart.
Also, there's this other issue, which is the money.
Yes.
Trump had a terrific advantage in money raising, and that has now disappeared, and he spent a lot already. I don't know what he spent it on, but he spent a lot already.
Well, I can...
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
Well, I can tell you a little bit what he's according to the New York Times. It's amazing how, I mean, I wouldn't say they frittered it away exactly, but it went to fundraising operations. No expense was spared in finding new donors online. The campaign assembled a big and well-paid staff and housed them at a cavernous, well-appointed office in the Virginia suburbs. Outsized legal bills were treated as campaign costs, and more than $100 million was spent on television advertising blitz before the party convention, the point when most of the electorate historically begins to pay close attention to the race. Among the splashiest and perhaps questionable purchases was a pair of Super Bowl ads the campaign reserved for $11 million, according to advertising analytics. More than it has spent on TV in some top battleground states, It was a vanity splurge that allowed Mr. Trump to match the billionaire Michael Bloomberg's buy for the big game. And then all these little things that added up. They hired a lot of highly paid consultants. More than $500,000 for a White House aide, a former bodyguard who became a White House aide, spent $156,000 for planes to pull aerial banners in recent months, $110,000 to Yonder, a company that makes magnetic pouches used to store cell phones during fundraisers so that donors could not secretly record Mr. Trump and leak his remarks because, what, he would say something outrageous? Yeah. So it's a lot of money spent in a very short period, relatively short period of time.
And the one that caught my eye there, Joe, was outside legal expenses.
Yes.
That means his personal bills for lawyers and others because of all the terrible things that the guy has done personally. Forget about campaign.
Yeah, that was a separate story over the weekend. The New York Times documented how he's pushed a lot of his personal legal expenses and his business, Trump Organization legal expenses, onto the campaign, coffers. So he's kind of cashing in. In the meantime, it's not certain, though, Joe. That story doesn't say that Trump is out of money. It just says they haven't said how much money they've raised in the last fiscal period, and they've yet to report it. But don't you think the story itself and all the brouhaha about how they're pulling back ad buying in some states is going to bring out the Sheldon Adelsons and the others
right.
with big money? And, they're going to – I mean, it might actually – be timed that way, and it turns out they may have some money. It wouldn't surprise me. And all of a sudden, you can't escape it with the barrage of ads if you're in one of these states.
Yeah, Mike, but the bandwagon, it becomes a reverse bandwagon. And if there's one thing we know about politics in the United States, it's that people want to be with a winner. And when it starts to look like he's a loser, that's bad news for him.
Right. They'll run like rats from a sinking ship.
The thing that affect on that story, that investigation that struck me, was how deeply corrupt the Trump Organization is in every aspect. There's governance and his business, which are entirely too close anyway. We've never gotten to the bottom of that, how one enriches the other wrongly according to our own Constitution. And they're both just rent with conflicts of interest and sucking sycophants who take money away for drivers. He has a campaign manager with a driver and a car. hardly in the interest of the campaign, you would think.
That's why the Michael Cohen book is so interesting.
I read the preface to that Michael Cohen book.
We have to break, but I would love to talk more about the Michael Cohen book because that's fascinating as well. So we'll do that on the other side of the news here. We welcome you to join in on the conversation. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller making up the panel this morning. And again, panel@WAMC.org. We ended by talking about Michael Cohen's book, so I want to pick that up. The new book, Disloyal, a Memoir, is out today. President Trump routinely referred to black leaders of foreign nations with racist insults. He had an abiding admiration for President Vladimir Putin's willingness to treat Russia like a personal business, and he was consumed with hatred for President Barack Obama. Those are the descriptions that Michael Cohen, a former personal lawyer and self-described fixer for Mr. Trump, lays out in the book, which paints the president as a sordid mob-like figure willing to engage in underhanded tactics against anyone opposing him. Stop me if any of this surprises you. As a rule, Trump expressed low opinions of all black folks, from music to culture and politics, Mr. Cohen writes in the book to be released today. He describes Mr. Trump calling Nelson Mandela, who led the emancipation of South Africa from the white minority rule, no leader. Tell me one country run by a black person that isn't a s-hole, Mr. Cohen quotes Mr. Trump as saying. He also alleges that Mr. Trump called Kwame Jackson, a black contestant on his reality TV show The Apprentice, a homophobic slur, and that he had deep disgust with black leaders in addition to celebrities and sports figures. He was also obsessed with, and we know this, but he was obsessed with Mr. Obama. The book describes Mr. Trump as having a faux Obama or fake Obama to record a video where Trump ritualistically belittled the first black president and then fired him, a kind of fantasy fulfillment that was hard to imagine any adult would spend serious money living out until he did the functional equivalent in the real world. That video, by the way, was released and was making the rounds over the weekend. The incredible thing about it is that they were going to show it at the Republican National Convention. but they didn't. And I think if you watch it, you'll know why they didn't. But that there is a little bit on the book which is out today. Rosemary, you said you read the preface. What was your?
I read his introduction, and I found it. I had not planned to buy the book. Now I think I'm going to get it. It's amazingly powerful. He has a difficult job as a writer because he's as Kayleigh McEnany said, he's a disgraced felon and. Recognized by everyone as a liar, and he's recanting what he has said previously and now supposedly setting the story straight. But I found it a really moving story about how he came to be ensnared by the Trump charisma and method. And it's something that's happened to a lot of my countrymen in the last 4 years. So I found it amazing. He has this ability to make you feel like you too can have all power. And you can become influential and meaningful. And that's the core of Trump's appeal. I think there's something important in this book for us to read and recognize.
And Alan, you said that this is a very big deal, too.
Oh, it's huge. Look, the guy's a scoundrel. He's a scoundrel. We know that. But I think his scoundrelness makes him a potent force in this, in that as a scoundrel, Trump knew he was a scoundrel. Trump hired him to do scoundrel's work. And now he is using what he knows to tell us what he did when he was there and what he heard when he was there. I don't think you can get much more powerful than that. Now, I think that there will be people like McEnany and others who will say, well, you know, he's a liar and a felon, all true. But I think that gives him actually some credibility.
That's interesting. Yeah, I agree. JP.
I'm really excited to read this book. I've already ordered it. And the reason I'm so excited about it is because he worked with Trump for, I think, 7 or 8 years before he was president. His door was three or four doors. His office was three or four doors down from Trump's office. And he is going to give a level of detail and an interesting narrative of to how Trump went from businessman to becoming president. And, you know, all of what Trump does in the White House, I think there are going to be two or three dozen tell-alls of all the crazy stories of what happened in the White House. But Cohen is going to give people, I think, the best kind of history as to how Trump went from a business person to becoming president of the United States. And he has a lot of, obviously, credibility, having worked with him for that long and now having, you know, fessed up and going to do a tell-all. I think it's going to be fascinating and more fascinating in many ways than a lot of the White House tell-alls will be.
And go ahead.
Well, JP, if I may, you know, one of the reasons I love having you on the panel and Joe's brilliance in doing that is that you've worked for Republicans, Mitt Romney and others. And, you know, it's not as if you're a voice in the wilderness calling out Democratic calls. You're a guy who really has looked and been interested in both sides. So I'm asking you a question as a, not as a bona fide Republican, because I don't know that you are, but as a person who has played, in the game, what you think this is going to do to Republican voters?
The Cohen book? I think the Cohen book... If I was Donald Trump today, what would make me most nervous is that New York Times story on fundraising, much more than the Cohen book. What Cohen, I think, is going to put out there is what people, I think, generally already know about him. I don't think there are going to be any new revelations where they're going to say, can you believe Trump said that about Nelson Mandela? Oh, my gosh, I'm going to take my Trump sign out of my front lawn and now I'm not going to vote for him. I can't imagine that. But the fundraising, you know, in campaign school, they teach you about budgeting. You need to significantly outspend your opponent on paid media from Labor Day until Election Day. The fact that he's the incumbent president and he does not have someone that he's trusting to watch over the purse strings is, I think it is the most dangerous story for the Trump campaign thus far of how they are going to get outspent from Labor Day till Election Day. It's unfathomable how that would happen to an incumbent president. And Sheldon Adelson, the tough thing about let's say Sheldon Adelson comes and writes a $100 million check tomorrow. The tough thing is that all these other campaigns have done their jobs in budgeting correctly and already bought that TV time from Labor Day to Election Day. So if you go to the local CBS affiliate in Toledo, Ohio, and you want to buy some time, they're going to say, sorry, it's already bought out for those weeks. So I think the New York Times story is really telling as to how much trouble this campaign is in, the Trump campaign.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, I don't know that the Cohen book is going to change any minds. As you say, JP, I don't know how many people are going to put the book down or go outside and take their Trump sign off the lawn. It's titillating. It's very interesting. And I read all the summaries that I could find over the weekend on it. But, Joe, you just interviewed some folks from the Miami Herald on, what, Friday or something, about the Grifters Club. And then you have the Mary Trump book, Strzok, the FBI agent who was forced out of his job. He worked with Mueller. He's got a book out. Bob Woodward's book is coming out. I mean, will it really make any difference? Will it change any minds? Or you know, that's what I really wonder. And the barrage of books will almost have the same impact of overwhelming people with information so that the message is muddy.
Are you implying, Mike, are you implying that only Democrats and their kind read books and that the others don't?
Well, no, there's books on the bestseller list by people favoring Trump. You know?
Number one book on the bestseller list on the nonfiction side is by Sean Hannity this week.
Right, exactly. And so the Trump supporters are going to pick that up and be affirmed. And people who don't like Trump are going to pick up some of the books I just mentioned, certainly the Cohen book, and they'll be affirmed and will just make them more solid. And you know, perhaps, you know, it's difficult to argue with JP's excellent analysis there, Alan. I mean, he agrees with you. You know, when you see the money, I mean, you both made the good point. When you see the money problems, that may not bring the Mercer money or the Adelson money or other billionaire money to Trump. It may be that he's branded a loser and they will stay away from him. They'll just turn away and figure I'll go 4 years down the road and try to find someone else in the next 4 years.
We're talking about these books as if they're important as campaign manipulations, and I don't think books matter, but they are important for history and for analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is indeed similar, what's happening now is similar to what happened in Germany in the 1930s. I'm really glad all these books are coming out now. We're not going to have to wait 15 or 20 years to see the analyses. So I think that's really important. And as for the money, Trump didn't have a lot of money or didn't put a ton of money in the last time. And he won because of capturing media. And he has more media attention now than he ever did. So I don't think he should be written off as handicapped. He could spend like profligately because he knows he can get more. And he doesn't need money in the same way that Biden does for ads. He gets his attention in different ways. He uses the incumbency brazenly to get as much prime time as he needs.
Before we go to a break, I just want to ask anyone who would like to answer this question, or as many people as like to answer this question. Cohen does write in the book about Trump's thoughts about his own supporters. And he says everyone other than the ruling class on earth was like an ant to his way of thinking, their lives meaningless and always subject to the whims of the true rulers of the world.
Cohen writes,
the cosmic joke was that Trump convinced a vast swath of working class white folks in the Midwest that he cared about their well-being. The truth was that he couldn't care less. Does that hurt?
Well, if they read it, it would hurt. if they believed it, it would hurt, right?
Well, but yeah. Do you think they'll believe it?
No, they don't care. They love it. They love when he talks like that. They talk about each other like that. They think it's always telling it like it really is. There was a famous cartoon that ran in 2016 that showed Donald Trump on a billboard in front of a field of sheep dressed as a wolf, saying, "I'm going to eat you all." And the little sheep in the field are going, "Oh, isn't that great? He tells it just like it is." That's what's happening. They don't care.
Well, on that note, let's break, and when we come back, we'll go to all the letters that we have. We welcome your thoughts, panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller. We'll be back right after this break. Morning. Welcome back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Let's go to the letters, and we begin with Louise, who says, "First of all, thanks for such an intriguing conversation every morning. My question today is, has anyone heard of the extra $300 for pandemic employment? Has our great Governor Cuomo said anything on this recently? I haven't heard a thing." I don't know the answer to that question. I don't think I have heard a thing either. I will say that the governor will be speaking this morning at 11:30, and we'll be carrying that live. But that is not a guarantee that he'll be discussing it. Does anybody know how this is working out?
It's not working out at all. The Senate is on vacation. There's no hope that the talks will get started again. And the state is so short of money. My God, there are cutbacks everywhere. School teachers are being laid off. Nurses are not getting bonuses. It's a mess.
But I will say that the New York State Labor Department did put out a note to those who were receiving unemployment saying that they were ready to take part in this program and kind of to stay tuned and to see where the $300 is going to come. And that's what I don't know how that's looking.
Well, you know, I'm one of those who think that Trump sees himself as the master negotiator and bargainer. He also, if he has a brain in his head, knows that these are cuts because of what he is refusing to do. They're going to affect human beings and they're going to get angry. So my sense of it is, he'll know when he's licked, and there will be yet another round of COVID relief. I'm betting on it, but you are so right, Rosemary. If in fact it doesn't happen, there will be continued chaos, but not only in New York and Massachusetts and California.
Oh, everywhere,
yeah. Yeah, but everywhere.
Right before the holiday weekend, the New York State Department of Labor said they would not specify when the agency will begin to pay out the new $300 per week federal unemployment benefit. The distribution was approved on August 23rd. This comes in addition to regular state unemployment benefits under the new executive order from President Trump. New York has 2.8 million unemployed claimants.
Yeah, I wondered if perhaps the state, I mean, it does take a certain amount of time when you have these old computer systems to set the whole thing up, but if they were deliberately taking their time with hopes that there will be a federal stimulus plan approved by both houses of Congress and the president will sign it. And then they won't have to shell out as much because, as Rosemary pointed out, the state is just bleeding. I mean, yeah. Bleeding. They were going to have a $6 billion budget deficit before all of this. Now it's looking more like $16 billion, and that's even growing.
You know, I've asked Cuomo time and again whether he has a secret plan if the president doesn't come forth and doesn't do what we're seeing him doing, Mike and me in this case. So he obviously has such a plan and has from the very beginning, and it won't be pretty, that's for sure.
Back to the letters, Rich writes, as we approach Veterans Day, let's not forget that Trump and his kids were found guilty of stealing and redirecting money raised for veterans charities to benefit his own campaign. This was the promise he made in lieu of participating in an Iowa debate. We go to Bob, who says it's a horror of this presidency that while Trump plays politics, California is burning up. We're having twice as many tropical storms, flooding, and planet-wide warming. Worldwide families are now occurring due to this horrible pandemic. Trump and his religious sect is bent on their will or no world. Jim says this is a familiar pattern with this president. He is preemptively blaming someone else for something he intends to do. It is not the military leadership that wants to start a war. It is he who wants a war to increase his popularity or to improve the economy via wartime spending. Just a side here, we got a nice note from Diane who said, as much as I love listening to the roundtable every day, it was such a wonderful surprise yesterday to have been given the gift of beautiful music and Tanglewood on parade. It was so nice to temporarily escape the agony of our reality of having been forced to live in Trump world, and it has been a long, unpleasant 4 years. Thank you so much, WAMC, for the enjoyable Labor Day programming at Tanglewood on parade. We go to Sugar, who writes, this is not normal times. This is not normal times. So much tampering and outright voter suppression is going on over and above past elections that who says what at this point seems unimportant? God help us all, says Sugar. We go to Marjorie. I have been phone banking in Wisconsin this summer, and while only a few people pick up, a surprising number of them have said they aren't decided yet. That is hard to understand. Anyone on that, on the undecideds?
Yeah, I just can't believe that. I mean, what will it take to help you decide?
Go ahead. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, no, I was going to say, but don't you think there are people who did vote for Trump last time, aren't really Democrats or haven't voted Democratic over the years and are struggling whether to not vote or vote for a third party or vote for, you know, make up a name or vote for Biden. And all of that is very difficult for them. And they there probably are people that are struggling with that. They aren't the people with the big flags that do these rallies, but they're people who traditionally would just automatically vote Republican.
Which, by the way, is why it is so important that Biden is the Democratic candidate. Because I'm telling you now, and I told you this during the primaries, that Biden was the candidate because when they got to the general election, they were going to have to give a portal for people to come into who wanted to believe that we would have a moderate rather than a leftist president. And there will be people who are annoyed by my saying that, but it's absolutely the truth the way I see it.
JP, what do you think?
I agree with Alan and Mike's analysis, and I do think that there are undecided voters or people that haven't yet decided whether to pull the lever for Trump and Biden, and I think the debates are going to be key in decision making, and also what happens during the last 3 weeks of the campaign. Those late stage massive news stories, from what I've seen over the last two or three elections, really tend to move undecided voters. Now, maybe there are enough decided voters where Biden's already a lock for victory. But for those that are still undecided, I see the debates and late stage news as what will be the deciding factors.
So Biden's got a problem. On the one hand, he has to remain moderate and attractive to those people we've been talking about. But in addition, he has to assure turnout. And for example, turnout among African Americans is humongously important. So therefore, every once in a while, he has to say something, and I believe he means it, of course, that will be affirmative to that group and say, okay, it's worth our going out and putting ourselves over the line and making sure that we get to the polling place or mail in that ballot. Don't you think?
Boy, I disagree with almost everything we've said on this score. I think that the debates will be amusing and people will watch them, but debates rarely make a deciding factor, except when there's some egregious error. And Trump can't make any more errors, and he's already made it without much effect. And people tell pollsters that they don't know or they're still thinking about it. I still think that that's still true from what we learned in 2016. That's because they don't want to say definitively that they're for Trump. I think that it's all really pretty much decided. We don't know the answers, so we can't tell what it is, but I don't think it's really hanging in the air, and that what happens in the next few weeks will matter all that much.
But don't you think the debates mean a great deal in that? The one way that Trump could save himself somewhat is by having his people prepare speeches which he reads badly off the teleprompter, as opposed to a debate in which he is going to be free reign and it is going to be classic Trump. And that's where an error can really be made.
Yeah, but the people don't watch the debates in great numbers, just like they don't watch the campaigns in great numbers. They read or hear from their friends about it afterwards. And so even a great mistake can be spun in a different way. Look at what's happening now with his statements. Probably true. I suspect that I more than suspected. I think that story is solid, that he was denigrating people. And yet you're still hearing a debate about whether, no, he really loves us and he supports us and no one's done more for the troops and us. And the same thing will happen with the debates. There's just nothing definitive. It's so maddening in this whole administration. There is nothing that he can do that's so bad that knocks him out.
And yet, Rosemary, take a look at what's happened with the polling of the troops. All of a sudden, for the first time, the Republican is losing. And that has made, I think, since this thing has happened, this outbreak of anti-military from Trump, it has made a huge difference. So it's not as if people aren't changing their minds. I think they are.
Oh, I think it's a big story. I think Trump's campaign was smartly branding, Biden as the Trojan horse for all the liberals, Bernie and AOC, et cetera, to bring in the new Green Deal. But now the conversation, and Trump won't give it up, the conversation is about the military. And Biden had run an ad earlier that, you know, showed his own dedication to the troops and, you know, and featured his son, Beau Biden, you know, in the military. And those are being brought back out now. And he's got the money to play them in all the places that count, places with bases like North Carolina.
This is a man who caged children. We don't even talk about that now.
No, that's true.
There's nothing he can do that's so bad that he doesn't rise up again. I've never seen anything like this in politics. He's had, what, half a dozen scandals that would have sunk any other politician.
All right. Well, go ahead. Okay.
October surprise. I just wondered.
All right. Let's take a break.
Cohn says he's perfectly capable of starting a war, and he thinks he will.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break. We'll ponder that. And when we come back, we'll go to that. We'll have other topics. We have letters. It'll be great. Panel at WAMC.org. Ray Graff is laughing at me. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Making up the group, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. We have quite a few to get to, so I'd like to do that and then move on to some other stories. We go to Kathleen, who says, I love Rosemary, but I ask that she stop lumping all white people in the Midwest as ignorant Trump supporters. These stereotypes turn Midwesterners against East Coast elites, quote unquote, and that perpetuates the problem. I live in New York City and Massachusetts, but the rest of my family is in the Midwest, and they are very progressive. Illinois is a reliably blue state in presidential elections. Governor Pritzker is very progressive. Tammy Duckworth is an Illinois senator, and Tammy Baldwin is a senator in Wisconsin. Rosemary.
Well, I don't think I really hit Illinois because it has Chicago, but Ohio gets my wrath. Wyoming is the worst state. Yeah, I do think that they are big Trump supporters, and that is a problem for me.
Brian says, I tune in when I can. You have officially lost your minds with hatred for President Trump. You have all lost your credibility. Educated, intelligent people understand that without the right to life, every thread of society unravels. Democrats need to start with the basics. Peace be with you. That from Brian.
Oh, my God.
I love that. Peace be with you.
Yeah. Come on, Brian. right to life. That means not killing people in prisons. It means death with dignity. It's so much more than stopping poor women who want to have abortions because they can't afford bigger families. So much more. It means taking care of children who are born for whom there are not resources. It means watching out over children in our service, in our children's services centers. It's so much more than that narrow definition you give it. Stop it.
And then there's Tom, who says, I'm undecided. I'm waffling between the apocalypse each side is promising when the other side wins. So far, I like the anarchy and socialist lawlessness that Fox News is fantasizing with a Biden-Harris administration. But you got to admit that Trump 2020 is way better for late-night comedy. Make America funny again. Best of luck, panelists. What a somber turn this morning.
There it is. You know, he is. He's amusing. And so if you think all politicians are the same, that each party is no different than the other, you vote for the one that's most entertaining, and that far and away is Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like editorial cartoonists have a field day with Trump, and they're going to have a tougher time with Biden. You know, he just
They're going to have to get their great pencils out.
Right.
I think there'll be plenty of comedy no matter.
They might find something somewhere, but, you know.
All right.
Let's see. Rob says, there's a reason that people always talk about the Kennedy-Nixon debate, because it's the last time a debate helped decide a presidential election.
Yep.
We go to... Go ahead.
On the debate, I've got the stats on the debate. Estimated 84 million people watched Hillary and Donald Trump in their first debate in 2016, making it the most watched debate ever. This is from NPR. That is more than the 1980 debate between Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. The presidential candidates will not get a larger audience for them to directly communicate to voters in any other way than the debates. I think they're hugely important in momentum, and in shaping voters' opinions. I think the debates are going to be potentially even more watched this time.
So do you think,
JP?
You may
be right, JP, but will they change minds, which is what I think we were really debating. And those Hillary-Trump debates, overwhelmingly at the time, Hillary won, and yet she didn't win votes from them. His line, you're the puppet, oh, you're the puppet, was probably the biggest mistake that came out, considering what he did with Putin. Did it help her to beat him? No, it didn't.
Well, the real question here is what...
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to say it's the candidate's opportunity to blow it during a debate. If Biden gets in there and he looks at all shell-shocked... Yeah. You know, or he doesn't look like he's got it together, or he commits one of his own famous faux pas, it could hurt him. It would give just rationalization for why he wouldn't be a good president to those on the fence.
So what you're saying is Trump could lose it. It's unclear whether Biden can win it. Right. I mean,
I think back to 1980 and I think Ronald Reagan easily won those debates. And even if you don't watch the debate, you're not one of the 84 million who watch the debate. You're going to see the most succinct clips the next morning on the morning news or whatever news you watch or whatever website you watch. You know, it's going to be there ready to see. So you'll get the gist of it in just a couple of minutes.
And I implore everybody to remember about that bandwagon. If you think it's going against you, you might change. People want to be on the winning side, especially those people who are uncommitted.
Darcy writes, why are we surprised at the bad handling of Trump's campaign funds? He's a terrible businessman and probably thinks he will be able to file bankruptcy.
Yeah, well, he's a terrible businessman who happens to be the president of the United States, the most important I'm not lauding him. I'm just simply saying, if he's so terrible, he's still alive. He's still done extremely well by being a politician and having disrespect for the American people. You know, I don't think it's so easy to just dismiss him.
I wonder whether the Trump campaign will borrow money and whether any banks will loan them money. You know, that sometimes happens in the
Deutsche
final
Bank
weeks of
will.
A campaign. And what bank?
Well, I don't know about Deutsche Bank now. Yeah.
All right, let's go to this letter from Bob, who says, spending time as a Navy medic with the 2nd Marine Air Wing during Vietnam, I do not understand how any American can support Orange Man or Mr. Bonespurs after his insult about my brothers and sisters who are heroes and patriots, not losers and suckers. Explain this to me, please.
The same way they supported him after he trashed John McCain, a man I have absolutely no agreement with politically. But even I know he was a war hero, and Trump trashed him, and he was blithely voted in after that. And the Gold Star family, he treated the same way. People who support Trump do not listen to his individual words. They just like the attitude, the bullying attitude, the strongman attitude.
And I would put the word racist in there, too, by the way, New Rosemary, because I think that's what this election is all about.
And sexist, too. I mean, we still had the Access Hollywood tape, and that didn't even hurt him.
No, people applauded his, he's got a pretty wife, wish I could do that. Oh, my God.
Donna writes, what do we need to do to get international observers to monitor this presidential election?
Jimmy Carter, I wish he wasn't so old and frail. He would need to come out like he did all over the world for the last couple of decades, right?
Stephen writes, is it possible for supposed supporters of the Democratic Party who are billionaires like Mike Bloomberg and others to donate money to shore up the U.S. postal system? Is that legal?
I think it is.
whether it would have any impact, given who's
right,
in charge of it.
If some individual wants to give money to the government and to the Treasury for a specific purpose, it happens all the time.
I want to get to let's get to the Postal Service story, just because it is somewhat it obviously ties in here. The legal lines that Louis DeJoy's alleged campaign contribution reimbursements may have crossed. Campaign finance laws are set up to prevent precisely what former employees of Postmaster General Louis DeJoy allege he did in a new Washington Post report: lean on employees to donate money to political candidates and then reimburse them for it using company money. Meredith McGahee, who is the executive director of Issue One, which advocates for stronger campaign finance law, says there are a lot of things in campaign finance law that you can get away with, a lot of gray areas or places where the law is weak. This is one place where the law is clear and has been enforced. The law is clear, but it's less certain whether DeJoy could face consequences. So brief summary of the allegations: five people who worked at DeJoy's former company, New Breed Logistics, told the Washington Post that they were encouraged to attend fundraisers DeJoy held and give thousands of dollars to GOP candidates. Two former employees said DeJoy engineered bonuses for these people that covered the cost of the donations, plus any taxes they would pay on their bonuses. Campaign finance records reviewed by the Post suggest that this could have gone on from about 2000 to 2014 when DeJoy sold the company. Alan.
Well, as I think Mike said, somebody said it before, JP, maybe it was illegal. It is not illegal to encourage your employees to go to rallies or to give money. It is illegal to compensate them for it or to say, okay, we're going to give you the money that you spent back one way or another. That's illegal. And Carol Maloney, who I know well and who is now the chairman of the investigatory committee, is holding a House investigation. Well, you know, investigations can lead to impeachment. So this last letter, which said consequences, that's right. But it's a little late to do that now, although it might be an interesting way of reining them in.
Rosemary?
Well, I love the retaliatory measure that the Democrats are investigating, but I don't have any illusions that it'll go anyplace. We do a terrible job going after enemies who are out of touch. I point out Zirkle, is that his name? The guy was the Interior Secretary, committed about 85 crimes. He's pushed out of office. He's never been brought to court, prosecuted. I don't think DeJoy will, even though he appears to be quite guilty of this. Why did he have to be in office all this time before we found out about it. That should have been investigated by the Senate or by journalists before, long before now. And even if it did come by some miracle to impeachment, which I can't see Nancy Pelosi wasting political capital under Joy when she won't go after, say, Barr. But even if it came to impeachment, there's the Republican Senate. So it's all kind of hopeless.
Yeah, I think that's why Trump.
Kind of hopeless.
Trump said yesterday he welcomed an investigation of LaJoy, and he said he's an honest guy. I don't know much about this, you know, because none of this will come to fruition before November 3rd.
No, of course not. Except that by doing the investigation, you might change some votes, and I'm sure that's what Maloney has in mind here. And the speaker, because if they do this, there will be some people who say, yeah, I love the post office and this is wrong, and this convinces me.
JP,
I think DeJoy could get in a significant amount of trouble for this. Where an employer reimburses an employee for campaign contributions is something I've seen in the past. That's a serious violation of federal election law. I don't think it's going to affect the vote in November, but I do think that news story after news story about the problems and what the potential is for the post office to do with the mail-in voting, I think is taking away some confidence of voters of mail-in voting, and I think that's unfortunate. I wish we had increasing confidence about mail-in voting rather than decreasing confidence about mail-in voting, especially during the pandemic.
No.
What was that noise, Rosemary?
It's so idealistic. It just isn't going to happen. It's a serious violation. So are all the violations of the Hatch Act that we saw in the Republican National Committee. Where's the prosecutors lining up to go after that? Oh, it's one of those laws that they don't care about, past the Beltway. Trump has done that throughout his administration. He's ignored the laws that are inconvenient to him, and there has been zero punishment for him and his cronies for doing that.
Do you find it?
How many of his cronies have been prosecuted and sent to jail?
You tell me. I can't think of any.
Well Manafort,
Michael Cohen.
Right? He Michael Cohen. Yeah,
his campaign manager.
His cronies have been indicted and prosecuted and sent to jail.
The guy who, think of any one of those cabinet members who was disgraced and pushed out. None of them have been prosecutor. Not a one. It just doesn't happen. He gets away with it. And look at himself. The emoluments clause. That.
What about Michael
going
Flynn?
On and on.
Was he in the cabinet?
Pardon me.
What about Michael Flynn?
I'm ranting, JP. So I wasn't listening to you.
Michael Flynn.
What about Michael Flynn?
I reserve judgment on that to see what happens with the case now that his own Justice Department is fighting for him.
What about Manafort?
He wasn't in the cabinet. He was.
No,
he
but he was a crony,
him,
all right.
Remember? Come
That's
on,
right.
Come
he
on.
Knew him.
Come on. No, you come on.
Now, Rosemary's
right.
point.
Yeah, we have a flawless. Yeah, okay. Oh, come on. We have a flawless justice system, and all of these people will be. Reckoned with. Yeah, sure. I believe that.
Yeah, I mean, these
nobody else does either.
They're being tried in the court of public opinion. People are losing their careers because of it. But are you surprised that a major GOP fundraiser was rewarded by being named Postmaster General and now is a tool of the administration to kind of defund and take down the post office? And I mean, none of that is a big surprise. The people who, I don't know if it's going to change minds, but at least it's being exposed and it's part of history, as you say, Rosemary.
Right.
We're getting that.
Yeah, I do like that the truth is coming out, but you have to wonder why are we only hearing about this now? He was a major fundraiser in 2015 and 16. Why weren't we looking then? And when he's proposed to be Postmaster General, why wasn't somebody then looking? And I mean by that investigative reporters or someone in the Senate who's supposed to be vetting this guy. Why is it so late? I mean, Trump himself, why were his bank fraud and tax evasion. Why are we only finding about that now, 4 years into his term as president? Really, I've become so upset with the inefficiency of our investigative systems. Really, they're terrible.
Hmm. Anybody else? All right. Let's go on then. We'll move to, let's see, we have about 5 minutes before we go to a break. We go to this letter real quick. How do we know whose pocket all of Trump's campaign money is going in, just like his inauguration fund? That is an interesting point. I also want to go back to, we were talking about the letter writer wrote about New York State and the $300, and we talked about the fiscal condition. So I would like to spend some time the fiscal condition of New York State, but I would like to talk about all of the states. There is an article in the New York Times today: with Washington deadlocked on aid, states face dire fiscal crisis. Local officials are slashing funding for everything from education and health care to orchestra subsidies. And across the nation, states and cities have made an array of fiscal maneuvers to stay solvent and are planning more in case Congress can't agree on a fiscal relief package after the August recess. House Democrats included nearly $1 trillion in state and local aid in the relief bill they passed in May, but the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky has said he doesn't want to hand out a blank check to pay for what he considers fiscal mismanagement, including the enormous public pension obligations that some states have accrued. There has been little movement in the stalemate lately. Economists warn that further state spending reductions could prolong the downturn by shaking the confidence of residents whose day-to-day lives depend heavily on state and local services. Alan, we can obviously talk about what effect this has on the presidential race, but what effect does this have on down ballot races and for the congressional representatives who are back in their district now and are trying to look people square in the eye and say, okay, this is what's going on?
Well, you know, it's interesting because in my conversations with Governor Cuomo, he has on many occasions been quite severe in warning all representatives, including Democratic representatives, that they better get this right and that they better make sure that the president comes across with this aid. Whether or not he'll keep that up when the time comes, I don't know. But basically, I think this election is one in which New Yorkers especially are going to be really livid about this president. And therefore, Democrats are going to make out like bandits. Now, in other states, there may be severe differences, but if you're not getting the money you need from the feds, they're going to hold the president and therefore his party responsible.
Mike.
Yeah. Now, I wonder if Trump will come along and sign something that will be a negotiated deal sometime closer to the election and somehow try to take the credit for it.
Right.
And you know, and that's always a possibility. I mean, it's tough because ideologically, the Republicans don't like the big blue states with the high pension payments, and that describes New York and California, for example. And this becomes a way to sort of promulgate their whole philosophy. But the economists will say that if the states all start to flounder and they can't handle this, and remember, states cannot run deficits. They can't just go out and make more money the way the federal government can. If they don't come through from the federal level, this pain is just going to continue for years and years and years.
That's exactly right.
Rosemary?
No. I agree. I think that says it right.
JP.
I think New York State is in a very bad fiscal situation. I think that the fiscal situation is actually much, much worse than what Cuomo has even said. And their only, you know, Cuomo's only play here is Biden wins and the federal government bails out New York and California and Florida and every state that has a big problem. But New York specifically has had, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people move out of New York City and into New Jersey and Connecticut and out of the city into Long Island and Westchester.
Great Barrington,
and,
Massachusetts.
I think that's going to get worse as the I think it's going to get worse as the cold months, you know, come down on us over the next couple of months. It's going to get less and less attractive to live in New York City in January and February.
I'm just curious, though, if we, Mike, if you look at this over the entire nation and the economic picture, one of the things that this president has been running on is the economy before the coronavirus. But if the situation gets even worse than what it already is, what impact does that have?
Well, it's fair to say that Trump didn't cause the coronavirus. We can talk and talk and talk about how he's mishandled it and he's made the impact of it worse. I mean, in European countries, unemployment is only half of what it is here in the U.S. now because they handled it a lot differently. But that aside, Trump says that I think the Biden people have started hammering home that Trump inherited a healing economy from Obama and that it continued to heal. And it wasn't a resilient economy. It was a disproportionate economy that favored wealthy people. It did trickle down. I hate to use the term. It trickled down and there was low unemployment rate. But right now, the people who have most of their money in the stock market, you know what? They're doing fine. Main Street is not doing fine. Wall Street's doing great. And if the Democrats hit that home, I think that the economy message is really going to come back to haunt Trump. He's going to own the sad state of the economy.
And we
bravo, Mike.
Yeah, bravo, Mike.
High horse, Mike.
maybe when we come back.
No. I think Mike's right. I think that you should hear that out of Joe Biden's mouth every single day. What Mike Spain said, we gotta email Biden and say, look, listen to Mike Spain say this over and over every day, and you'll win the election.
Yeah, that's what gives me pause. Mike says it. I'm not hearing it from Biden, who is still being too reactionary.
We're going to take.
By the way, the stock market, the Dow, is taking a big dive again today. So
I know, but last week, Alan, the Dow was at an all-time high. I mean, when it takes a dive, skimming along, but it's way up there. It's nowhere like it was in. April and May.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. About 15 minutes left with our group, and then we are going to, before we move on, I will say that we have the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, coming up. He will be having a briefing. And will be talking to us at 11:30 this morning. He'll be doing both an announcement and briefing from New York City, I believe. And we'll be going to that live in just under an hour this morning. We welcome our panel back, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and J.P. Miller. And, of course, we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. This from our last go-around. E writes, on the subject of Trump possibly starting a war before the election, there has been quite a noticeable uptick in fighter jet activity here in the Pioneer Valley, and a friend in the National Guard was just called up for service and sent to Kuwait. Possibly related? Your thoughts?
Yikes.
Yeah, it is yikes.
Well, Cohn says that's what's going to happen. He thinks that his desperation to win will lead to that. But who knows where and when. My bet is that his big problem will come with the Chinese, although, you know, that's pretty dangerous territory to get into.
It is. We go to Mike. Were you going to say something? I'm sorry.
No. Go right ahead.
Okay. Mary says, am I the only one who remembers Ronald Reagan having a senior moment during the closing comments during the last of his debates?
You are not. I remember that saying, oh, my God, he's senile. He'll never be elected. And the next day, there was all this stuff about how poetic and an elegiac he had been. I said, holy cow.
He started, Mary goes on to fill in just what Rosemary said. Delivering his closing comments, he began waxing poetic about driving along the California coast, started rambling, and literally had to be cut off when he ran out of time, even before making his point. I was stunned that he was given a pass and no one seriously addressed it. Some of us were not surprised when he finally announced that he had Alzheimer's. The double standard by the GOP has a long history. Imagine any Democrat in that scenario.
That's exactly why I spoke earlier as I did. That was, he was showing his frailties in that moment, and that was spun as poetry. And he won and went on and spent a questionable next 4 years. And that can easily happen here. There are severe questions about Trump's health right now, not just his coherency, which has always been an issue, but his does he have dementia? Did he have mini strokes? We don't really know. And we don't care, apparently.
But that question of a double standard, I mean, if you look at something that it seems to me that everybody's just waiting, and I'm not pinning this on you, JP, but you mentioned it earlier, everyone's sort of waiting for the Biden gaffe during the debates. But my God, I mean, how do you compare that to President Trump? And I know President Trump has made a great deal about Biden being senile, but I don't know. There does seem to be a double standard there.
He is a great projector.
I think
If there's one thing we know about Trump, it's that he projects whatever his own issues are onto everybody else. And so, I'm not surprised to hear this when he talks about Biden. I'm sorry, JP, go ahead.
I think that Biden is benefiting greatly from low expectations going into the debate. People are expecting him to have a gaffe. People are expecting him to have senior moments. If he goes into the debate and he has a good debate like he had during the last couple debates of the primary process, it is going to be spun that he is the great victor of the debates. You know, if he has good debate performances, he's going to greatly benefit from that. If he does have those senior moments, people are going to say, aha, I told you so.
Hmm.
Look what the Democrats did to Hillary in the last election. She had pneumonia, which is finite and curable, and they turned that into a brain disease that she was out. There's dirty tricks involved with health, and it's one of the things that we ultimately need reform on before electing a president. We need a full and complete medical record.
And then is it fair game for the if they go? I'm just projecting here, but if they go after Biden and say, okay, see, he really screwed up. He's not with it. He has his issues. Is it fair then for the Biden campaign to bring up mini strokes?
I hope so. Yes.
Now, when you say mini strokes, of course, we're referring to that time that he was rushed off to Walter Reed, and it was never fully explained. And then there was a recent report that he was having some kind of serious medical problem, and they even alerted Mike Pence that he may need to step in. But they didn't describe in the news reports what it was, and Trump was asked about it, and he said, I didn't have any mini strokes, and that's the first time anybody heard it.
And then he blamed it as fake news.
There's all kinds of evidence being pointed up on at least the social media. His foot drags. He has slurring speech. He's tripped a couple of times. Trump is old, too. So if he's going to attack Biden on that, I hope the Democrats will turn around and say, well, how about the slushing words? What are you doing there? What's with that, Mr. President?
Well, as Alan said, go ahead, JP.
There's a lot of video of Trump slurring words, and they should use Trump's own words against him.
Yeah, the Lincoln Project is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the age thing is kind of ambiguous because you look at a guy who is right on top of things, Anthony Fauci, or Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi is 80, and they're sharp. I mean, and there's other people that are much younger in their 60s who are kind of lose it. I mean,
they use ageism all the time, and they use it against Pelosi too. Her teeth are going to fall out and her Botox.
I know.
You know, they are not above using
they do that because
woman,
she's
anti-age
a woman.
Sentiment.
Yeah.
No, they're sexist. That's why they do it to Nancy Pelosi.
I'm curious as to... I mean, Rosemary, I'm pretty sure I know your answer on this, but how do you find out about, as you said, these stories can be rather elusive because you don't know, how do you find out if it is indeed mini stroke? As Mike mentioned, no one even thought about mini strokes until Trump brought it up himself, which almost added credence to it. And then the ultimate question, does it matter to the voters?
Well,
I know it matters to us, but I'm asking, will it matter to voters?
Well, it auctioned. Oh my gosh! You know, it did not even the heart attacks that LBJ and Eisenhower had some heart issues too. Wasn't that of importance to the electorate? It used to be important. That's why we had this tradition of full health reports. Trump broke that tradition, and there's
yet Eisenhower could have won four. Eisenhower would have won four more times if he could have, but he couldn't have. So Joe, before we go, we should just mention California. We should mention California, the fires that are out there, and the fact that the president of the United States is saying very, very little about that because he knows that that will lead to a question of a discussion of climate change, which is something he's unprepared to handle right now.
Well, and he's never really done that, right? I mean, he wanted to cut off fire relief last month, and yep. So I don't know. I mean, he's never. If you, it gets to again another variation of the question that we've been asking several times this morning: what sticks to the wall? And we haven't seen it in the last couple go rounds in the presidential elections that the climate change has been a huge yep. issue when it comes to voters. But when you have a president that is just a denier and saying that it's not an issue and then is trying to take money away from the problem, I don't know. And what does Joe Biden have to say to turn that conversation to something that would be effective?
You know, you're right, except that there's one thing that has to be said here. There are lots of things which don't stick to the wall, pardon me, but they do for some people. And so if you take all the little things and you say, all right, you know, climate change, what percentage of the population make up their mind on it? I think it's a fairly hefty one, but let's say it's 5% or 6%. You go on and on and on. All of that stuff adds up.
Rosemary?
Trump doesn't care if California burns up. When Wyoming starts getting right. on fire, then we might hear from him.
Yeah, you betcha. That's exactly right. California, let California burn. He probably won't even go there because there's not that many people supporting his campaign to give him big money. That's the only reason Republicans
right.
would go there. And he probably won't even be able to do that. And frankly, he's written California off. His strategy is to have it's going to be a lose the plurality but win the electoral college, and that wipes California out of it.
Yeah. And he's not going to blame it on climate change. He's going to blame it on the fact
they didn't raise their forest.
Right. Well, they had a gender reveal party.
Yeah.
And the smoke, there was supposed to be a smoke bomb that would send plumes of pink or blue smoke to tell the people whether it was a boy or a girl, and when the pyrotechnic device ignited, so did the wild grass and the meadow
right,
of El Dorado Ranch Park. Yes.
Right, but it's important to remember, if you look at the maps, you can look at the map online of where the current fires are and where the fires that were put out are, and they're all over California. I mean, you know, yeah. and this is not something where you can rake the forest floor, as Rosemary pointed out.
No.
And Trump suggests they didn't do, right?
No, but it was 100, and it was 100, and back to the climate issue, but it was 120 degrees in Pasadena yesterday. So,
yeah.
You know, obviously there's issues.
Hottest it's ever been.
Yes. Ever been. Yes. Alan, you were going to say something. I'm sorry.
Nope, I'm
oh, okay.
delighted with the conversation. Thank you.
JP.
Obviously, I think climate change is hugely important, but I Biden talked about it during his convention speech, and I watched Trump's part of Trump's press conference last night. He talked about energy policy, but if I'm, the candidates, I'm talking about the economy. I listen to, the gospel according to James Carville, which is it's the economy, stupid, and don't forget about health care.
All right. We are just about out of time. I want to thank everybody for being with us. A reminder that we have Governor Cuomo coming up. He has a briefing and we're going to be making an announcement and a briefing coming up at 11:30 in New York City. We'll be going to that live as soon as it occurs. Alan, thank you very much.
And thank you. And one last thing, we heard from Sugar, who said, we don't give Joe enough credit. Let's make sure that Joe knows he's loved and appreciated. And so say it.
That's very nice. Here, here. I got thank you. I got a little sugar. Isn't that nice? Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, thank you. Coming up next, the Congressional Corner on WAMC.